Hi, David. It's good to see you again.
Hi, Rajat. Great to be here.
We're a lot further into this war than when we first spoke. It's nearly 5 weeks in, and Donald Trump is in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, Donald Trump is in a trap of his own making. He's started a war, but he's certainly not at all clear how to finish it. He's bombarded Iran for a month along with Israel, certainly degraded it militarily, but Iran, of course, has used its leverage, namely closing the Strait of Hormuz, through which 20% of the world's oil supply flows, and that's already having a big impact on global energy markets. And it's unclear what Donald Trump can do to reverse that, or how indeed he can actually exit this war. There does not appear to be a strategy for that.
To try and understand Donald Trump's thinking, you've gone back in time a little bit and looked at a few elements of his life up until this point. And you've argued that Donald Trump has had a lot of success creating the reality that he wants to see, even when he was growing up.
That's right. I think Donald Trump has been a master at creating his own reality all his life. And of course, he's now 79 years old. The basic operating principle is construct a narrative, declare it to be true, and then relentlessly force the world to submit to it. I think even since childhood, which was relatively privileged in New York, the son of a wealthy property developer.
My whole life really has been a no, and I fought through it.
That has worked for him surprisingly well, sometimes just through sheer force of will.
You know, I started off in Brooklyn. My father gave me a small loan of $1 million. I came into Manhattan, and I had to pay him back, and I had to pay him back with interest.
One influence always worth remembering is Norman Vincent Peale, who wrote a book called The Power of Positive Thinking.
Indubitably. Now, I don't know exactly what that last word means.
Which really encourages you to just imagine yourself succeeding as if it can all be willed into reality and the power of the mind.
You're in a place where presides the one who can change everything for you by changing you.
And on Sundays, Trump would be taken to church in Manhattan and listen to Norman Vincent Peale, and that book has had a big influence on him.
You'll find the answer in the fourth verse of the 34th Psalm.
For an article last week, I interviewed Gwenda Blair, who's a Trump biographer. She talks about how, you know, even when he was at school, he used to talk to his roommate about becoming famous one day, because fame also gave you the key to really create your own reality and do whatever you want. And that seems to have guided Trump through a lot of his life, including his early business career, when skeptics would tell you this is not succeeding, but he would try and convince people and often succeed and say, you know, this hotel, this casino is going to be a great success. Give me a financial loan. And even though his business has declared bankruptcy 6 times, that didn't stop many people voting for him in 2016 based on the idea that he was a very successful businessman.
And you've taken us to his moment in politics when he entered the realm there. We still see repeated examples of where he had this ability to paint his own reality and examples of people believing it.
Yeah, I mean, Donald Trump really entered politics in earnest with a lie.
Today, I'm very proud of myself.
A very big lie, which was the claim that Barack Obama, the incumbent president, was born overseas in Kenya.
Our president has finally released a birth certificate.
So it's obviously a racist assertion with no foundation that forced Obama to eventually produce his birth certificate. But plenty of people seem to buy that notion.
Now, I know that there's going to be a segment of people for which, no matter what we put out, this issue will not be put to rest. We do not have time for this kind of silliness. We got better stuff to do.
And Trump was on his way and ascendant. And during that 2016 election campaign, he told all sorts of lies and made false claims about his rival, Hillary Clinton. And again, this was no barrier to success. He would say over and over again, we're going to build a border wall and Mexico is going to pay for it. Mexico never said it would. And indeed, during the first term of Trump's presidency, Mexico never did. But none of this stopped Trump. And, you know, I was here in Washington for Trump's first term in office, all 4 years. And according to account by the Washington Post newspaper, he made 30,000 false and misleading claims during that time. And again, most of the time he got away with it. Although I would note, I think he came unstuck during the COVID-19 pandemic, which he claimed would just magically disappear and was not too serious. And of course, the opposite was true. Many thousands of Americans died. And I think that was probably quite crucial in Trump actually losing the election in 2020.
So sometimes reality does pierce through. Having been in the room with Donald Trump, can you explain what skill that is to convince people of what he's saying or bend them to their will, even when perhaps they might see evidence before their eyes to the contrary?
Yeah, and of course he certainly did it again with the 2020 election, where he seems to have persuaded a lot of people that it was rigged, even though there's no evidence for that, and that the January 6th, 2021 insurrection was some heroic stand for democracy, when in fact it was an attempted coup. And I've certainly, you know, been in the Oval Office and elsewhere when Trump has spun these lies. I would say a couple of things are happening. One is he's a very charismatic person. When you're in the room in a cabinet meeting or whatever, all eyes go to him. He's certainly into the whole concept of being repetitive. I mean, he's just said these things over and over again at campaign rallies and press conferences and other forums. And I think for some listeners, there's just that sort of moment of surrender. But more broadly, I would say he's telling them something they want to hear. They want to believe the exaggerated claims about immigrants from Haiti, for example, eating cats and dogs, or millions of people pouring across the supposedly open border. Trump has very smartly exploited those grievances. He's giving them the narrative they crave, and that's partly why he's been able to create this artificial reality for them. But yes, it's one reality. And then I think there are millions of Americans who've never bought it.
David, let's come back to the war on Iran with what you've said in mind. How does Trump's talent for enforcing this particular version of reality that he has explain all of these very contradictory statements about the war he's been making, for example, you know, claiming to be in peace talks and then talking about continuing to bomb power structures, things like that?
I mean, what's most striking is that several times now he's declared victory and used the phrase, "we've won," which I think, again, as a soundbite on Fox News, the conservative network that a lot of Trump viewers watch, that's very satisfying. It's this display of U.S. military firepower that it can impose its will anywhere in the world. The contradictory messages, I'm not sure what voters make of that. Perhaps just the confusion suits him. At least he thinks in his mind it gives him flexibility to try and have it both ways, to say we've won, but then say, well, actually, maybe even a ground invasion is required at some point. But this may also be where Trump is unraveling a bit. At the moment, as if he's not creating one coherent artificial reality, but lots of contradictory messages. It's very muddled at times. And in some ways, maybe that's working for him. But I think, you know, even some of his own supporters may be questioning, is this war won or is it not?
Is it part of an example where he prosecutes the war based on instinct?
Yeah, I mean, Trump often acts from instinct. I think there's very little medium to long-term strategy. He feels slighted, for example, by NATO allies, and so he will lash out. But in the context of a war, it's highly destabilizing, and no one is quite sure where to turn next.
He's come up against the reality of a country like Iran. And you've spoken to experts who talk about how there's similarities there where Iran also creates its own reality.
Yes. People I spoke to sort of made that case that, you know, this is the stuff of authoritarianism when a government tries to be so controlling that it sets a narrative for its people that cannot be questioned, does not allow freedom of the press. And obviously, you know, for years, the Iranian government has pumped out propaganda and what it wants its people to believe. And when some have dissented and protested, they have been crushed without mercy. And it's a sad statement perhaps about where we are, that there is a parallel in the US. And one wouldn't want to overstate it because there's still a very rambunctious press and many journalists asking questions about this war. But certainly Trump is trying to exert more and more control over messaging. We've seen that with media organizations forced to leave the Pentagon and the nature of the Pentagon press briefings these days. We've seen Trump's repeated attacks on the media over the years, accusations that failing to support this war effort is somehow unpatriotic. It tells you everything that when Trump, as we've discussed, makes confusing claims about this war, sometimes people say, well, I'm not going to believe this until I hear the Iranian side. You know, extraordinarily, some people now almost trust what the Iranian government is going to say before the American one.
I mean, picking up on that, do you think that it could be argued that Iran is actually a little bit more clear-eyed than Donald Trump? For example, they could see the value in choking the Strait of Hormuz in order to wield their economic power, whereas Donald Trump seemed to dismiss that that could ever happen.
It would not come as a great surprise to many analysts if Iran has a cooler, more organized strategy around this conflict. It's had years to prepare. This is a society with thousands of years of history and an independent streak and a determination to stand up to perceived bullies such as the United States. And in fact, almost any country right now is probably a bit more conventional in its thinking and operations than the United States, where Trump's behavior is so volatile and unpredictable and mercurial. One of our columnists the other day suggested if this was your grandfather, you'd be discussing taking away the car keys. Every day produces some extraordinary new social media post or statement or wild digression into the White House ballroom or what pens he's using, building a statue of himself in Venezuela. I mean, it's very bizarre. And one does suspect that despite the military operation killing some of its leadership, Iran has sort of slightly more mature, sober heads at the helm, because that's not very difficult right now.
We'll be right back. Do you think Donald Trump has met his match with Iran?
Time will tell. I mean, I think in the short term, it certainly appears so. Trump is used to steamrolling his domestic political opponents and over the past year, even international ones, again, partly because what we've talked about, this ability to sort of spin up his own reality and for millions of people to believe it. One person I talked to for this article said, this is Trump's Waterloo. And yes, he's met his match, his moment of truth, because that same game does not apply in wartime. The stakes are so much higher. And in a war, you just cannot wish yourself to victory. You cannot will a victory so simply. All of that said, I would never completely write Trump off, because I think it's also very possible we will see him maybe abruptly withdraw and try to end this conflict in the same way that he abruptly stopped threatening Greenland.
I mean, is that an example of where perhaps he can just construct his own reality? Because we can see that this war isn't working. Do you think there'll ever be a point where Donald Trump accepts that or admits that?
No, I think one thing we can be sure about at 79 is he's not going to change, and we will not see any kind of humility. There was a telling moment last week when he suggested that Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, was the one who said, let's go for it, as if perhaps he's already looking for someone to blame. I think he may also try to blame Western allies.
We're seeing a few examples of that, aren't we?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just in the last 24 hours, another astonishing Truth Social post saying they've not been there for us. Just go and get your own oil. You can't depend on America anymore. I mean, with every day, he chips away at the foundations of the NATO alliance. And yeah, Trump will never say this was a mistake. You know, he will look for someone else to blame.
When we hear people talk about Donald Trump perhaps getting into a quagmire, does it seem like, from what you're saying, that may not happen because he has this ability to just walk away and say that he's won and it doesn't matter what the reality says, even if the Strait of Hormuz remains closed and the economic fallout continues to ricochet around the world?
Always so hard to predict. Clearly, as we speak right now, there is a very clear and present danger that Trump could get sucked further into this quagmire, and we have thousands of US troops in the region. They could try some kind of ground invasion. That could go horribly wrong, and this could escalate terribly. And Trump may be tempted to do that because, you know, he thinks he's on a winning streak after Venezuela and other perceived successes. But yeah, I do also believe there's a possibility he could walk away tomorrow, perhaps because he's spooked by financial markets. That always seems to get to him. Perhaps some military advisor will get through to him about the perils of this. And yes, even if he quit tomorrow, the messaging would be, this has been a tremendous success. We killed so many Iranian leaders. We degraded their military. The world should actually be thanking the great President Trump.
David, I'm sure we will talk to you again before this thing is over. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Washington Bureau Chief David Smith. This episode was produced by Miles Herbert, sound design and mixing by Daniel Simo, and the executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. Don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts, including on Spotify. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.